All right, folks, welcome back to week two recap of our good old little podcast here at MWCWired.com. Same old people, not going anywhere. Jeremy Moss with Matt Kennerly, and we had another, I'll say, exciting week of college football. Stuff surprises us all the time.
Yeah, and in this particular instance, in this particular recap, not always in a good way, but we'll get to that.
Nope, there is good and bad things. We had 11 teams in action, and if you want to check out our other shows or other stuff, we're at Blog Talk Radio, of course, iTunes. I want that 5 stars, man. Give us a 5-star review. I don't want to pay people, but what do we have to do to get more 5-star reviews? What's a good thing to do to help us out?
We can send out compliments to those people who give us 5-star reviews at the beginning of podcasts.
There we go. You get a shout out. That's one way to do it. Check our written stuff out, MWCWire.com. But we want to review Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Blog Talk Radio. Tell 4 friends. And then have those 4 friends tell 4 friends. And that way we have thousands upon thousands of people who listen.
That's the dream.
That is a dream. Thousands of people to listen. So let's get going. Let's start. We'll make it quick. On Thursday night, it was an FCS matchup, Utah State versus Idaho State. Obviously, the Aggies won. Let me ask you this before we get going. It was 51-13. Do you trust the Facebook numbers that say nearly 830,000 people watch this game?
Well, how many Facebook users are there? Like 100 million or something like that? 800,000 doesn't seem like that much.
There's one guy I noticed on there who's getting really picky about it, because I think they're kind of accurate, because if you ever watch these games, like I watched the San Diego State game a couple weeks ago, I watched some of this Utah State game, New Mexico, these only show about 2,000 to 3,000 at a time, maybe 4,000.
Mm-hmm.
Their theory is that it's counting, oh, people just scroll through and hover over it for 20 seconds as they're reading something else, and that counts as a view.
I mean, maybe, but you know, even so, I think that it's probably only slightly bigger than the kind of audience this game would have if it were on, say, ESPN3 or even on like CBS Sports Network or something like that, you know?
You think there's 800,000 people watching CBS Sports Network? Like when we have Wyoming, Oregon next week, is there going to be 800,000 people watching
that
game?
Okay, you know what? I have no idea, because I'm trying to, I don't know enough about Nielsen ratings to say one way or the other, to say like what the average, you know, audience looks like. But, you know, to me, considering just how many Facebook users there are, you know, how many people might have been just like, hey, cool, free college football on my favorite social network, you know? To me, that sounds about right.
Good. I'm a little dubious a little bit. I'm trying to pull it up right now. Let me give you a quick example. I just saw this tweet again the other day from the same guy, or just now, so I just wanted to look into it. So just for example, let's see here. Let's find a... Okay, Washington Rutgers on FS1 had 971,000 people. So you're telling me nearly as many people watch Utah State, Idaho State as Washington Rutgers?
Well, remember, it's not how many people are watching, it's how many views. So it's not necessarily the entire game.
That's the point, too. Yeah. So I think that's what they're getting at. But I don't care if it...
And that's what I'm saying. It sounds about right.
And then really quick, just for reference, one more, we'll get to the game. Troy Boise State on ESPNU. You want to take a crack at what the ratings were on that one?
I do not.
I'd rather you just tell me. 194,000 people. 194K.
I thought that would have been larger.
But just a reference. But who cares? It's on Facebook. It's easy to watch. Just give me a clear picture and we're good to go, right?
Yeah, and if you're a Utah State fan, you got to be happy about how your team rebounded from a, you know, pretty tough loss to Wisconsin. You know, you kind of expect them to be able to come out and put a whooping on a team like Idaho State, and especially before halftime, that's exactly what they did. And I think, you know, Kent Myers had a lot to prove especially, and, you know, the passing game had a lot to prove, at least in my point of view. And he had about as good a game as you could have, you know, 24-26, 323 yards, 2 touchdowns through the air. And he also added 85 yards on the ground, too. And, you know, what I talked about as far as, you know, can this offense create big plays? If you go through the box score, they had 9 plays through the air of more than 15 yards and 9 plays on the ground of more than 10 yards. And that is exactly what this offense needs to do in order to be competitive in the Mountain West.
All right, what I wanted to see was the running game. Did it get going? Yes, and who is I think they have, do they have a new starting running back in El Toro Allen?
They might.
I know it's Idaho State, so I'm not getting too far ahead of myself when they beat up on the Bengals, but 103 yards on 19 carries, a good clip. Juan Hunt had 10 for 50 on, which is solid. And there was no Tony Lindsay.
Well, it says that Tony Lindsay apparently got a shoulder injury. So he did have 28 yards on 6 carries, but according to the Deseret News, he's going to be off for a couple of weeks.
Oh, so, I must have missed that. He's not even on the depth box score. He had 28 yards.
Oh, I must be... what am I looking at right now? Maybe I was looking at something from last week.
No, it's okay. But he's out for a couple weeks. I thought I saw something, but maybe Allen's a guy. If Lindsay's out for about a month or almost a month, Allen, 103 yards, and Myers can run a little bit, we know, and Hunt can do some stuff. Maybe they found success, and we'll see when they actually play an opponent, because the big swing going from Wisconsin to Idaho State, I kind of want to see something between. Like, they play Wake Forest next week. That would be a good barometer game for them, because Wake's not overly impressive. Even though, just really quick update, ESPN's matchup predictor right now, 90% chance it was Wake Forest victory.
Well, Wake Forest did look pretty good against Boston College on Saturday. I did watch that game a little bit, and we can talk more about it when we get into the preview for next week, but don't look past Wake Forest, especially since the Aggies are going to be going on the road for that game.
Sure. I just point out, like, more of a comp, like, even Wake Forest to Wisconsin, it's still a Wake, I'd rather play Wake Forest, an easier chance to maybe win, but you're right.
Oh, yeah.
They did beat up on BC, but it's a non-ranked team, and it's not an FCS team, so that's what gives us a good chance to see what Myers could do, what Allen can do, what Hunt could do, what this defense can do, or because they got after the quarterback a little bit here and there, but they won 51-13. No, nothing more to say, because this was expected, and I'm just glad any troubling issues we thought they had, we at least got to see it taken care of, even against a lower division team. So congratulations, Aggies, you are now 1-1 on the year.
There you go.
And I guess we'll go, should we go in a chronological order, or how do I do this?
Might as well.
Because ESPN does not have an order, but I know the first game was Fresno State, Alabama, correct?
It was.
Is that the first game of the weekend?
We can just go there anyway.
Sure, we'll start with it. 41-10, let's move on. No, I'm kidding.
So, somehow there's a lot of positives about this game, or at least if you pay attention to other people. How much of this game did you actually watch?
I watched about a good first half of it, because I didn't want to watch Abilene Christian CSU. I didn't want to watch Gardner Webb and all that much, because you're FCS teams. I wanted to see what Fresno could do. I do know you had an issue and you missed the first 7 or 14 points because of trying to find the dang game.
Yeah, well, yeah, my internet kind of freaked out, and by the time I got my internet back, they were already down 14-0. So,
and watch ESPN, you would think, because there's overlap and they put a buffer in sometimes, like, oh, this game's now on ESPN before ESPN2. You would think if you're on the Watch ESPN app, if you just click on the dang game, it would take you to the game. Not always the case. But, so I missed the first touch. I'm like, oh, crap, 7-0. I saw some good things as well because, yeah, it's 41-10. It wasn't relatively close, but there was a few times they, Fresno drove down the field, got that early field goal where they had 3 points. They got, was a 27-yarder. They, Virgil made some decent throws. Like, they were giving praise to, like, Keyshawn Johnson for what he could do. And they moved the ball a little bit here and there, but it wasn't anything. They couldn't go anything down the field all that much, really. They did have, like I said, a couple, that 26-yard touchdown at the end of the game. But I thought the offense actually looked okay when they're trying to do things, but Alabama is just so good, it's hard to take away from, oh, they'll do great next week. But I thought they moved the ball okay at times, because there's only one interception for Virgil, which is pretty good against his defense. And we look at the other side, like when Alabama had the ball, yeah, Hurts had that first 79-yard touchdown run on the first play, I think. They had a tough time stopping that offensive line. But they gave some... Who was that linebacker for Fresno? It was like, what, 6'1", 250 they kept talking about?
Jeffrey Allison.
Allison, yeah, I figured. He played pretty well. And it's... There, I was reading some previews to, like, oh, nobody has the size to do anything against this team. But hit 14 tackles, a sack, a TFL. They did okay. Like, it could have been much worse just because of what we've seen Fresno doing last year.
Okay, so I'll tell you what I'm disappointed in then. I think the one big
offensive line?
Yes and no, because as everybody pointed out, yes, you know, they only allowed three tackles for loss, and they only gave up, I believe, one sack to Alabama the entire game. But the flip side of that, that a lot of people overlook, is as a team, they only averaged 2.6 yards per carry. You know, Ronnie Rivers just was never really able to get it going. He only had 29 yards, 3.2 yards per carry. And, you know, even beyond that, you know, Virgil, I was a little disappointed that they didn't let him take more shots down the field than he did. It seemed like a lot of the stuff they were taking was, you know, underneath stuff. You know, it didn't seem like he did through that many passes that were more than 6 or 7 yards downfield. And while, you know, there were a couple of plays that sprung from it, you know, Damari Scott had a nice catch, and, you know, Kyle Rittering had a tough catch that had a few yards after the catch. But on the whole, I was a little disappointed that they didn't decide to air it out at least a little more often. You know, I remember the diving attempt that Jameer Jordan had, where, I mean, it was not an easy catch, to be fair. Some people were giving him grief, but that was not an easy catch to make. And so I give him a little bit of slack.
Oh, right through his hands? Jeez. That one?
It was. And, you know, like you said, the touchdown that Virgil ended up throwing to Grimm in the fourth quarter was right on the money, too. But they didn't really throw downfield beyond those couple of attempts. And so to me, that was one disappointment. You know, the run blocking, again, was a little bit of a disappointment. And, you know, as for as good as the front seven looked against Incarnate Word a week ago, like you said, they had trouble stopping Alabama's running game. And that was one of the things that I pointed out in my preview, is like, are you going to be able to force Hurts into obvious passing situations? And they didn't really do that because, you know, Hurts was too busy running all over them. And as a team, they had over 300 yards rushing. And I feel like that's a little problematic if you're thinking ahead to non-conference play. Like, if you are not going to be able to stop good running games, you know, how are you going to be able to stop a San Diego State or, you know, a Boise State or a Hawaii? You know what I mean? I mean, you know, again, Marcus McMarion looked good in kind of cleanup duty, but it just kind of depends on your perspective. And I think that I wasn't totally inspired by the play calling in this game. They had chances that they missed. You know, they had the interception in the end zone that, you know, Jackson Finch just basically dropped, and Alabama was able to turn that into 3 points. So it was just, it was one of those things where, yeah, you could see where there was some progress being made, but on the whole, I was still a little bit disappointed in how things turned out.
Well, you can be, because when you look at the, I know they ran very well, and Hurts only had, but had those two huge runs. That's a big deal, because actually, look what they allowed to, like, Najee Harris. He only had 70 yards. Bo Scarborough, they didn't need to run the ball very much, but Scarborough ran the ball 6 times for 36 yards. And he only had a long of 9. So there were a few plays here and there on the running game where they actually made some stops. Like, outside of those two long plays by Hurts, they only allowed really a 25-yarder to Najee Harris. That's it. So they didn't make big plays when Hurts gets us 2 touchdowns, but maybe I'm just looking for some optimism there. And you look at take away big plays, but they happen anyways. Maybe they would have ran the ball 10 straight times for 10 yards. You know what I mean? Like, still got those same yards by 4 different running backs. That still could have happened. Instead of a 55-yard one run, it could have been 8 running plays for 55 yards. You still give up the yards, took them longer, but if you kind of break out a little bit of plays throughout, where if you get rid of kind of longer plays, quarterbacks aren't going to run as much against this team typically, like, unless they play Drew Brown to run a little bit, Chapman won't, San Jose State won't, maybe Rodgers for UNLV, but yeah, they almost gave up, 9 yards per carry on defensively for the rushing game allowed. But get rid of what Hurts did, they actually did reasonably well stopping the run. But it flips, you still gave up 100 plus yards on 2 carries. So you got to look at both ways. Yeah. Yeah. I'm just looking for something there. Was it just disastrous, but still.
Yeah, you were still giving up. You were still giving up over 5 yards per carry to the running backs. You know what I mean? And I feel like, I mean, the truth, I think, is obviously somewhere in between how they looked against Incarnate Word and how they looked against Alabama. But there is that kind of lingering concern because we know that there are some pretty decent running games in this conference. And that's something that you'll want to watch out for if you're Jeff Tedford and the defensive staff.
So were you satisfied with this game, how it played out? Because we knew it wasn't going to be a win. They covered the giant spread. Were you say, okay, I'm okay with how this result came out to be?
I mean, sort of. I don't know.
That's fair. It's a bad loss still. You lose by 31 points.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the result by yards per play, and I actually went back and looked at this because other people were saying that, you know, they played hard and stuff like that, but by yards per play, they only had, you know, 4.3 yards per play, which was right in line with just about every high-profile blowout loss that they had in the last 3 years of the Drew era. So, I mean, yeah, you could say they played harder. They didn't quit. That's all well and good, but the result was exactly the same. So, make it that what you will, basically.
Okay. Yeah, there's some positives, but still negatives. It's still a long way to go, so we'll see what happens. Let's go to the – we'll skip – I don't know what you're looking at here, but let's go to the next three afternoon games. We've got Abilene Christian, Colorado State, 38-10 Rams did their thing, and Nick Stevens looked very well. Looked very good. Running game was fine. Matthews, Dawkins, Kinsey ran well. The Gallup had 100 yards, and they basically shut down Abilene Christian.
Yeah, it seemed like they had a little bit of a lull kind of in the middle of the game. Oh. They were up 17-0, and then the offense had a little bit of trouble getting things going for a little while. Obviously, it didn't hurt them in the end. Like, they were able to get it going in the third quarter and going into the end of the game, where they outscored Abilene Christian 21-10 after halftime. But, on the whole, it was fine, I guess. I watched most of this game, and they looked pretty solid, all things considered.
There's a couple things like turnover on downs that happened. Okay, you go for it on 4th-and-2, you don't get it. You should be able to get that against this team. They had a fumble, but they got the interception back against Christian. They had a punt return allowed against them for a touchdown. A couple things here and there, but overall, it's like you went 38-10. Nobody got hurt, I don't believe, and you got Marvin Kinsey's got five reps and a touchdown running the ball.
Well, and they continued their trend so far early in non-conference play of being able to force turnovers too. Jamal Hicks ended up with two interceptions. That's the second straight week that a defensive back has had two interceptions for the Rams. And, they put up, 8 tackles for loss, which against a team like Abilene Christian is exactly what you want to see. So as rough as they had it last week against Colorado, this was a nice win all around, I think, for the Rams.
I don't think I'd say, with the two interceptions, this is kind of an interesting thing here. For their quarterback, they had four guys make a pass. Started with was Dallas Seeley. Just noticing he was fairly efficient, 25 of 38, but overall they're 26 of 45, which, with that 55%, that's okay. You would think that'd be lower when you look at where they had 7 quarterback hurries in this game. I'm just nitpicking a bit, but 7 QB hurries, they still allow their starter to go almost 60% completion rate. I'm just nitpicking, but that's just one little thing I noticed. But they passed well, they ran well, turnovers were there. Congratulations, you're 2-1.
There you go.
It's an FCS game. What else do you want from us, folks, right? Just say, come on.
So, really. Shall we move on then?
All right, let's get to Wyoming Gardner-Webb. What? Come on, it's okay.
All right.
Wyoming 27-0 over Gardner-Webb. Congratulations on the great first half, because second half, somebody hit the snooze button. 3 points only, and in the fourth quarter. So, I'm disappointed in? They need to run the ball and find a running back, and they don't have one.
That was going to be my first point, if you hadn't brought it up.
Sorry.
No, it's fine, because it is worth pointing out. Because, Kellen Overstreet and Milo Hall couldn't even crack 2.5 yards per carry combined. That's not a good sign. And I think it was interesting. I think it was Robert Gagliardi pointed out that they pulled the red shirt from Trey Woods, who ended up having a couple carries late in the game. And he might be someone to watch going forward, because the guys that they've had in the backfield in the first couple of weeks just haven't been getting it done. And if you're not going to be able to find success against Gardner-Webb, that I think could be problematic for Josh Allen, who was good in this game, 22 of 32, 328 yards, 2 touchdowns, no turnovers. But, you know, it seemed like in what I watched at this game, you were still seeing some instances where he was playing kind of like sandlot football. And I don't know that you necessarily want him doing that too much, if that makes sense.
No, you don't. We've seen what he's done when we played Iowa. I mention these games all the time. Iowa, Nebraska, BYU, Eastern Michigan, San Diego State. And this is a bad team. That shouldn't be happening. It's when he plays good teams, and he has to be more disciplined, and especially when you're playing a team like this, you know, no need to be fancy. Just go out there and play football. Because, like, yeah, Greg Bull's always he's like Brett Favre. Well, Brett Favre throws some stupid interceptions. I'm sorry, but you still can't have those. I don't care how good you are. Do you want to get the ball between four defenders on a dime where the receiver can only get it with his offhand? No, that's not going to cut it. You want to find the guys who are open, not necessarily the easy pass, but you want to find the best pass. And you don't always have to make the big play every single time.
You know, on the flip side, though, there are some things I think they can be encouraged coming away from this game. You know, we know that Austin Conway is a viable number two, who actually led the Cowboys in receiving yesterday, had a career-high 135 yards and a touchdown.
Yeah, I was going to mention that, too. Yeah, they found a second receiver. Because, you know, you got C.J. Johnson there, but Conway said 11 for 135. They did what they did, but I just want to see the running game is the biggest concern for me because they seem to not have anybody there.
And I think you can also be encouraged by the fact that, you know, Gardner-Webb was they relied a lot on their running game. And Wyoming held their own. You know, they only allowed 3.3 yards per carry, you know, to not only the Bulldogs. Did you know that they're the running Bulldogs?
Well, they ran 52 times. What else is there to expect? You got to live up to the name.
That's true. But I mean, I think that if you're thinking ahead to the kinds of run heavy teams that you're going to be seeing, especially in the Mountain Division, you know, they ended up with, you know, seven tackles for loss, and they kind of forced them out of their element, especially late in the game, where, you know, they were able to move the ball a little bit on the ground. You know, they probably want to improve upon allowing 9 of 17 third down conversions. But, you know, for as run heavy as this offense was, I think it's a good sign if you're thinking ahead to, you know, Air Force in New Mexico in particular.
Well, we'll see what happens because who do they have upcoming? Are they still in non-conference play? No, they got Oregon, that's right. So, did you see any of that Oregon-Nebraska game at all?
Oh, goodness.
I was watching a bit. I'm like, I'm looking for a game. I'm like sitting on my computer. I have this dual monitor thing. I'm like, okay, I'm trying to write my recap real quick for Wyoming because I'm like, well, it's like hours late, but I'm almost done. Still need to get something up. So I'm like, this game's a blowout. I watched it at Temple Villanova really quick. Hey, Oregon-Nebraska's playing. It was, 42 points in the first half, and they nearly blew it?
Yeah, we'll have to talk about the Ducks in our preview podcast, because that was a really weird game.
But I was just trying to see what they do. I'm like, oh, because Arkansas State nearly beat Nebraska in the opener. But yeah, they scored 0 points in the second half and won. It was 42-14, and they nearly blew it. Jeez. We'll get to the Ducks next week. And if you noticed our website, I put on Twitter, I'll probably refreshes up higher, but it's the old joke everybody else does with the old Duck Hunt video game t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
Go buy it if you can, I guess. I don't know. It's pretty cool. But let's move on to what's the next game? What's the other FCS game we have this week? My tabs are going crazy on me. We had, not FCS, San Jose State, Texas. Almost FCS game, 56-0.
Oh, that's not cool.
I apologize. So was a Todd Orlando correct saying they're now back at the national title contention?
But here's the question, though. Did they display the appropriate amount of grit in this game?
You shut a team out 56-0, I'd say yes.
It was not a great performance from San Jose State. They basically got beat, and, you know, they ended up having a lot of the familiar problems that they had in the past. Especially when it came to running the football, Texas basically shoved it right down their throat. 406 yards on the ground and 6 touchdowns. That is not...
Who are they, Air Force? Come on, New Mexico?
That's not good, you know?
And conversely, they only rushed 42 yards on their own. This is Texas team playing it. Was Sean Ellinger, is he a true freshman or a redshirt freshman?
He is a true freshman.
All right, so Montel Aaron... make it as it's a tough start. You're going to Austin, take on Texas as a freshman quarterback, and well, you go 12 of 23. This 56 points was just embarrassing.
It was kind of an unenviable situation that Aaron was stepping into, and then I don't know if he ended up getting pulling late or whatever, but we also saw an appearance from Sam Allen as well, which kind of makes me think that Josh Love has kind of blown his opportunity at the starting job for good if they're already going to a third guy. But, you know, more so than that, I was also a little bit disappointed that the running game disappeared again. You know, I thought that they were a little more resurgent after last week's Cal Poly performance, but, you know, Dejon Allen was, he only had 5 carries, but he led the team with 22 yards. And, you know, the two guys that we expected to have a solid season, you know, Zamora Ziegler and Malik Roberson, 7 carries, 11 yards between them. And, you know, if they're not the guys, San Jose State's going to have to figure out sooner or later who that number one guy is going to be. Because if Montel Aaron is going to be learning on the job, you know, we know they have talent receiver, but they're going to need some help in the backfield in order to be competitive.
Yeah, there's not much to take from this game. Like you mentioned, Love, I was doing my QB rankings. I mentioned that Love's probably done if they bring in Allen. But Allen probably just got into, like, let's get him some reps. This game's out of reach. Let's see what he has just for future sake. I doubt they're going to go to Allen over Aaron unless something crazy happens. But it's probably, here, get a few carries in there or a few under centers, a few passes. He went 3 of 6. This Texas basically just, like, it's like the chokehold game. Like you mentioned last year for San Diego State Fresno, but at least Fresno didn't get blown out by 56 points. It was only, like, if you go by quarter, 7 points, 14 points, 14 points. It's just a consistent, we're going to score, we're going to take our time and get touchdowns. There's the only thing you could say about this game. You'd hope no, I don't see too much positives in this game, really, because there aren't any. They didn't move the ball well. Aaron only didn't even complete 50% of his pass. I guess you want to go to Frank Ginda, 12 tackles, TFL?
Yeah, I mean, the only argument you could really make is that between this week and next week's game at Utah is try not to get too down if they end up getting blown out next week by the Utes too. We may not really know how good this offense can be until they get into conference play a couple weeks from now.
So looking at next week's schedule, should I try to go to that game or is that not worth my time?
That depends on how you feel about blood sport, I think.
I am a Ute fan, so there's that. I'm glad they beat BYU last night, so that's always a positive. I'm just serious, thinking about it. Should I go cover the game? Go introduce myself to Lawrence, who's been very nice to us from San Jose State? Or just sit home and watch part of it because I really want to watch Stanford San Diego State, so maybe I'm going to stay home.
Well, we'll find out, I guess.
I think staying home is the right call on that, right? That's the right call. Has to be, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, good call. Because I can't stream CBS Sports Network, so that nixes me just watching that game, but sitting in the Rice Eccles press box, chugging a Coke when hoping whoever's quarterback doesn't get their head knocked off by Lotulelei or whoever, or Chase Hansen or something, getting a pick six. So, next game, let's move on to the actual Mountain West here. We'll get to that game later because that'll be, I don't know, whatever, we'll get to the next game here. We don't need to discuss too far ahead. Let's go to Hawaii, UCLA. Dang it. I am upset about this matchup.
Why is that?
Because Hawaii didn't play close, 56-23, and my way to get Pac-12 Network failed me, so I didn't get to watch hardly any of this game. Following along on Twitter. I will say this. There are some positives in this game, because with John Ursua playing, I figured, okay, they have a decent shot. But, man, Josh Rosen, I think he's back to being what he was last year, or freshman year, I should say. 5 touchdown passes, nearly perfect, 22 of 25, 329 yards. He threw 3 of those to Darren Andrews. The secondary from Hawaii, who we thought would be okay, had no shot in this game. There was nothing they could do.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's worth pointing out is that, especially in the first half, you know, even though it ended up getting out of hand, Hawaii had chances. You know, their very first drive, they started their own 25, and they get all the way to the UCLA 34 before they end up in a 4th and 10. And, you know, even though it's probably not worthwhile to try and go for it in that situation, they pin UCLA at the 1 on their first drive. Then they go 99 yards for their first score.
99 yards. On seven plays only.
And then, you know, beyond that, you know, they got to the UCLA 32 on their second drive, and Ryan Meskel pushed a 50-yard attempt wide left. So, you know, those first two drives, they have almost 100 yards of offense and no points to show for it. And, you know, UCLA takes those opportunities and, you know, basically makes them pay for it. So,
well, it's not just that. They missed field goal. They had a 4th and 22. They go for it, get 19 yards, get stopped. They had an interception return for a touchdown, and then they go 10 plays and get all the way down to the 24 and incomplete on 4th down. Instead of going for a field goal at the 24, which would be, what's that, a 41-yarder, they go for it on 4th and 10. I don't know why. That's much closer than the 50-yarder they attempted. So there were chances to make this respectable in the first half, like you said. If you go every possession, like, in that first half wasn't very good. Something bad happened, partly because no points. But they took, Hawaii took their chances and moved the ball. They just didn't get in the end zone or get
I think that's probably the biggest disappointment is, you know, they were able to move the ball on the ground, but they weren't able to stop Josh Rosen. And, you know, obviously there probably isn't a quarterback of Rosen's caliber in the Mountain West. But you got to do better than allowing 22 or 25. That's like, what, an 80-something percent completion rate?
Yeah. Good. Very good.
Yeah. So, you know, I think it's a positive that they were able to move the ball. Drew Brown had an okay game, all things considered. You know, 23 of 38, 227 yards and 2 touchdowns. And obviously, Diosmi St. Juste had a pretty good game as well. He had over 150 yards, but at some point, that defense is going to have to find some answers because they got pushed to the limit by UMass and they basically got torn apart by UCLA. And, you know, if you look at the schedule going forward, it's really not going to get that much easier for them.
Yeah, because even if you look at, let's just say, like, to play, just like, okay, let's see what happens here. Let's just say they scored points in those drives. Like, the first time they punt, whatever, you punt in the first drive, that's fine. But you get a field goal, 3 more points. They get a touchdown. It's 14-10. Let's just say on that going forward on downs where it's 4th. Let's say they get the first down and end up with a field goal because they got 19 yards. They're pretty close. That's maybe 3 more points or 21-13. Let's just say they end of the half, they kick a field goal instead. Yeah, it's 9 more points. That could have changed the game a little bit, but I wouldn't say they're going to get touchdowns and all those. But then they go end of the half, they go fourth and 10, 24. They could have had, realistically, maybe 9 more points on the board, which doesn't seem like a lot, but if you get 32 points, maybe there's no pick six. There's no 99-yard touchdown drive. I don't think it would have made the game that much of a difference, but there's blown chances on offensively on this game, even though they moved the ball very well. You're playing UCLA, but you got to finish teams that are – you got to finish your drives. And I love Nick Rolovich going for it on some of these. 4th and 22, he gets 19 freaking yards. That's pretty bold. And if they could convert those and get points out of them, maybe it's 40-32, a much better game than 56-23. I don't think it would have been a victory, but you're right. The defense, when they're playing San Diego State, when they're playing UNLV, can do a little bit here and there. Maybe Fresno, once we see them play a more comparable team. They move the ball well, but like you said, defense, man, they gotta find something. Because Tavai only had 4 tackles in this game.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's also worth noting that they were 50% on 3rd down conversions, which is actually really good, you know, considering the potential mismatch there. But it was those 0-for-3 on 4th downs that really made the difference in this game. So if you're gonna look for a positive, you know, we knew they were gonna be explosive. The question, I think, that some people had was, were they going to be able to be efficient? And in a lot of respects, I think they were in this game. It's just the breaks didn't go their way.
Do you still think that they are the number 2 team in the West?
I think they probably are. I mean, I think that they may have more severe questions on defense than I suspected. But I think the offense is definitely going to make them competitive in the division.
All right, let's go to the next game here. Let's go to UNLV Idaho. Sweet, sweet revenge for the Rebels.
A very convincing win.
this was an interesting game because, yes, it was convincing, 44-16. That third quarter, they just blew the doors off of the Kibbe Dome. And here's the thing that's interesting looking at it. Like, okay, how do they get 44 points? Well, first off, you got Lexington Thomas. And we should note Charles Williams. Is it official he's out for the year?
I hadn't seen anything to that effect. I just knew he was out for the game.
I saw that. Hold on. From Tyler Bischoff, he does some stuff for AM720 down there in UNLV. I have a tweet here. Out for season-ending ankle surgery. So he didn't even play, or at least maybe he didn't get any carry. So it's all Lexington Thomas. 190 yards, 3 touchdowns. That's how he won. They won this game. But Armani Rogers, I'm like, okay, let's see what he can do. Like, oh, let him loose. 10 of 16, 193, a TD, a pick. Okay, that's not bad. Until you consider, not to be all negative, one of those passes was a nice 94-yard toss to Devontae Boyd. Outside of that, 9 of 15 for 99 yards isn't very good.
Yes and no. I mean, did you happen to see the highlight of that 95-yard strike, though?
Of course I did. Great.
Because that was a dime.
It was, yes, it's in our highlight reel for the week two games. I'm just maybe nitpicking, but no, that throw was amazing, and he got it right there to Boyd for the touchdown. I'm just looking at 44 points. Where did they come from? They didn't come from Rodgers. Not that he played poorly, but I was just looking around, like, 44 points is a lot when your quarterback has less than 200 yards passing.
I'm going to say this because I didn't get a chance to watch a lot of the Howard game last week, but I did watch pretty much all of this game. Armani Rogers, I think, is for real. And
even though he had two fumbles?
I'm sorry.
The Cam Newton thing ticks me off. I'm going to probably be too hard on him forever.
Well, yeah, but that wasn't... I mean, we could tap the brakes on that kind of comparison, but I mean, I watched him play in this game. And yes, maybe he was a little more of a game manager in this particular instance. But, you know, we saw what he could do with the 95-yard play to Boyd with his arm. But you also saw a lot of what he could do with his legs. And, you know, you said it was all about Lexington Thomas on the ground. That maybe is only half true because Armani Rogers chipped in with 86 yards of his own. And he looked really fast as a runner, and obviously with the size that he has, looked like a very tough runner as well. And so I think that, you know, we knew coming into the year this was going to be their strength, was running the football. And that's exactly what they did, not only with Thomas and Rogers, but also with Xavier Campbell, who chipped in with 81 yards of his own. So they didn't really give him a lot of opportunities to throw the football. Like, they didn't really need him to. You know, he was only 2 of 5, especially on third downs, which is, you know, okay, not great. But again, he didn't really need to be in this game. But I think that if they need him to be going forward, that he's going to be up to the challenge.
All right, so the running game's good. He looked good running the ball and throwing the ball. 44 points is a lot, I'm trying to kind of figure out. But how good's Idaho? Weren't they predicted, what, third in the Sun Belt, I believe?
I don't remember off the top of my head. But
trying to check here in the quick preseason mags, but they're good. They have a good quarterback there in Linehan. He threw for 260 yards.
Yeah, I mean it wasn't
one of the better guys on the Sun Belt. You got Silvers and
yeah, I mean it wasn't like an A+ performance by the UNLV defense. But I do think that they deserve a lot of credit from rebounding from last week's disaster. Because, you know, they only gave up, you know, 300. I was going to say they only gave up 384 yards of total offense, which doesn't sound great. But, you know, Idaho ran a few more plays than they did, and they only allowed 5.5 yards per play, which is pretty solid, all things considered. And while they only had 3 tackles for loss, they also forced a turnover as well. So, yeah, maybe there are things that still need to be worked on. But I think on the whole, you know, they held Idaho to 5 of 15 on third downs. They were relatively penalty-free, and I think that those are things that you can hold on to going forward.
All right, real quick. Idaho was 6 from the composite magazine type of projection. So they won a bowl game last year, so that's what we got, right? They beat up on Colorado State.
I mean, it's a good win. I think it's... I think as weird as it sounds to say, it might be kind of like a statement win. Like, no, yeah, last week was embarrassing, but we're actually pretty decent, if that makes sense.
Really quick for you, I got some odds that just popped up real quick. If you're the oh, never mind. So really quick, Utah State, Wake Forest. Wake Forest is a 2-touchdown favorite.
Okay.
That seems like a lot. And San Jose State's a 26-point dog to Utah, so.
Ooh.
Just popped up. So I just happened to check out Odd Shark really quick on Twitter. So, all right, let's get to the next game here. Toledo, Nevada. I was pleasantly surprised in Nevada's defense at some points in this game.
They were put into a lot of really difficult situations in this game.
They were. They made it, like, the game ended up being 13-point difference. That fourth quarter, Toledo only got the field goal. But there's times where Toledo couldn't get it on, I believe, at least once or twice. Like, I'm like, God, they need to stop inside, like, the 15-yard line defensively. And they held Toledo at least once or twice, a couple times on downs, I believe. They held him to a missed field goal. No, that was it. It was a missed field goal where they got him inside close, where it's 34-24, missed field goal. But then, of course, Nevada can't take advantage of a fumble. Okay, great. They got Toledo. Toledo goes three and out. Interception by Nevada. Like, they had end of the game. They were in this game. They had, like, multiple chances to get inside to score. They're at the Toledo 30-yard line after a huge play. I know it bounced around, but fourth quarter was not kind to Nevada when they ended up losing 37-24. Their defense did some good things, but, man, they offense couldn't get going in that final frame where their defense stepped up big time for them.
I mean, I kind of think a lot of it had to do with the fact that their special teams really put them in a hole, especially in that first half. Because if you look at the drive chart, Toledo's starting field position, especially on their first five drives, is kind of absurd. Because they started at the 50 or in Nevada's side of the field on each of their first five drives. And that was when they ended up scoring their first 17 points. And it could have been worse if not for, as you pointed out, the fact that they had a goal line stand at one point in that first half. So I think when you consider...
And a negative play, and that when they got it to 44-yard line or 46-yard line, minus 6 yards, three and out. So defense, it took Toledo a while to get going as well. This wasn't like, we figured Logan Woodside would just crush him and sling the ball across the field. But Nevada's defense, yeah, 37 points, but they made some plays. Woodside only had 232 yards.
Yeah, I mean, the flip side of that, though, which is something that I think might still be kind of the Achilles heel of this defense, is that they gave up almost 200 yards rushing. And, you know, some of that I think has to be adjusted for with the, you know, tackles or sack. Actually, Nevada didn't have any sacks. Never mind. So they ran the ball a lot, but I'm noticing just now that they had only 3.2 yards per carry, which is surprising to me. And, you know,
it is. And they only allowed a couple 10-plus yard plays, not that many.
Yeah, and Toledo was relatively, you know, penalty prone. You know, they ended up having 14 penalties for 110 yards.
So can I go back to blaming the offense and those fourth quarter chances they had? Or is it, I say offense and special teams. Like you mentioned, the field position and then end of the game where they had chances to put up points and they couldn't do it.
I mean, I think yes and no. Because on the one hand, Ty Ganji had basically the same kind of game he had against Northwestern a week ago. Like, he had the exact same 19 of 37. But he also had, you know, a bit of explosiveness on his side. Like, they ended up having five plays of more than 15 yards. And four of those plays were over 30 yards, including two, that, you know, long touchdown they had to McLean Mannix, which was 75 yards, I believe, on one play late in the second half. So I think that the fact that they continue to be explosive is a good sign for this offense. But what they're going to need to work on is just kind of what I said last week. They're going to have to find a way to be more efficient because, yes, the explosiveness is good. What's not as good is the fact they were only 5 of 13 on third downs. Like, they're going to have to figure out a way to keep the chains moving at some point.
And they didn't run the ball very well, all that well either. Maybe Kincaid and Jackson Kincaid's are running back average about, what, 5 yards a carry, but only 12 attempts for 63 yards. So that's not too bad, but you got to run the ball more and mix it up, because when your quarterback's under 50% passing, you got to move the ball somewhere else. And you look at his yardage, almost half of it came on those two plays, that 75-yarder and the 50-yarder to Wyatt Demps. You got to kind of find a balance and move the ball, but this game, the result doesn't surprise me. It's just kind of how it ended up playing out. Because Toledo getting 37 points, I could see that. But it was a hard-fought 37 points. It wasn't them just going down the field and Logan Woodside going, say went 24-30 for 350 yards. He wasn't his normal. Well, that's still a good game for him, but he wasn't as explosive as what Toledo's normally done in the past. So what does this make you think of Nevada a little bit? Is it still work on the defense, work on finishing offensive drives, and that they might be better than we thought? Like, are they better than San Jose State right now, you think?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
What about Fresno State?
Probably.
Okay.
I mean, I think that on the whole, Nevada has played a... I mean, obviously, yes, Alabama, but also Incarnate Word. I mean, I think that Nevada has shown that it can hold its own against quality opponents, which, you know, maybe it won't necessarily be pretty in some games against, like, San Diego State, for instance. But they're starting to look more and more like a team that could pull an upset or two in conference play if they can find a greater degree of efficiency.
Especially passing the ball.
Yeah.
All right, ready for the near comeback? With we can officially call them the Throwbos now, right?
I think we can, yeah.
We got some love on Twitter, people liking the Throwbos. That's nice, the hashtag.
Mm-hmm.
So 30-28. 23 fourth quarter points for the Lobos. I missed the beginning. I mistakenly thought it was a safety. That was not a safety that happened there.
It was not. It was a blocked extra point attempt.
Return for touchdown.
Yes.
Okay, a couple things here. Yeah, they came back. They're down, 30-25? Like, this game, I'm like, come on. 30-5, excuse me. I'm like, what's going on here? Biggest takeaway, what the heck, rushing game. How does this happen? You're held to 176 yards against New Mexico State. Sorry, Aggies, but Lobo should be tripling that amount versus any team, essentially.
I mean, I think part of that, I think there's a couple of reasons for that. Some of it had to do with turnovers, you know, because they ended up, I believe, having two fumbles on the game. And, you know, Lamar Jordan just didn't help himself by throwing two interceptions as well. And that was, I think, a really significant part of how this game turned out, because, you know, New Mexico State was able to turn that into points more often than not.
Yeah, they were plus two. Four turnovers to two turnovers. Penalties played a big deal, 13. 2 of 13 on third down. They weren't efficient. And a little bit, too, if they're wanting to throw more, they were down early, so they had to throw the ball a little bit to catch up. And they nearly did, and... Like, when you look at the combined passing numbers, I'd have to clearly look and see what happened, but this has to be their best passing game since Bob Davie was their head coach.
Yeah, I wish I had taken the time to look that up before we started. But, you know, I think there's a couple of things worth pointing out. Like, I don't know if there's necessarily a quarterback competition now, but, you know, Takava Tuiati did... On the whole, have a pretty decent night. You know, he was 10 of 19, 151 yards, two touchdowns. But he was very streaky in those attempts. Like, he was 6 for his first 8, and then he missed 5 passes in a row. And then, you know, he kind of came up clutch, especially late when they had the chance to tie it, where he had the 19-yard touchdown to Jay Griffin. But, you know, if you look even further into the numbers, you'll see that they were only 1 of 8 on third down throwing the football. And that was, you know, really troublesome. Like, they needed to be better, because they just needed to be able to extend drives. And so I think if you're looking for anything out of this offense, like if they want to be able to throw the ball more, they're going to need to be able to do it to extend drives. And that wasn't something that they were able to do against the Aggies. And it came back to bite them in the end.
Yeah, I was waiting for them to score. I'm like, I gave up. There's so many good games on. I'm like, I'm sorry I'm not watching this fourth quarter, and I should have. I got everything else going on. I'm like, what am I going to do? Too many good games. But There's no word right now. I've been poking around at the Albuquerque Journal, looking on Twitter. No word on what the quarterback situation is going to be. But while however streaky Tuivasa was, he also didn't turn the ball over and had two passing touchdowns.
Yeah, I mean that's also true.
So you got to look at that too. If him actually scoring points, he scored points, and Lamar Jordan did not score points. He threw the exact same percentage, but had 48 fewer yards. And Jordan had negative yards of rushing the ball, where he normally could run for a good, 30 to 50 yards per game. That's kind of what the expectation is from him.
I mean, the other big disappointment when you're thinking about their first two games as a whole is, they went up against Abilene Christian in their opener. And yeah, the Wildcats ended up going 99 yards on their first drive, but they buckled down on defense after that and basically held the offense in check, which was pass heavy, by the way, pretty much the entire game. And in this particular instance, they just didn't have an answer for Tyler Rogers. You know, he dropped back to pass 57 times, and they only had one sack. Like, they need to be able to rush the passer a little bit better than they showed yesterday. Otherwise, you know, we know that there are teams in their division that are going to be able to throw the football one way or another. You know, I'm thinking about Josh Allen, thinking about Brett Rippon, if he's healthy. We'll get to that in a minute. But they're going to need to find a pass rush if they want to survive in this division.
Exactly. Let me ask you this really quick, because this was one of the Twitter questions we had. And normally I'd go for the preview, but we're gonna go to the Boise State game here in a second. New Mexico plays Boise Thursday night. Their question was, who has it worse on the short week, Boise or New Mexico? I'm going to say Boise, because New Mexico's offense is pretty unique, and I would always give advantage to New Mexico or Air Force or a team that runs that type of offense. And now saying we'll get to the Boise game, the injuries with the quarterback, but also got New Mexico with their quarterback conundrum, perhaps quarterback questions. I will go that way, but I would say Boise has it worse going into this week, because we'll get to the game. Cozart looks shaky in that fourth quarter.
And I think I would agree, when you consider that when you have one less day to prepare for this offense, usually never a good thing.
2 days, it's Thursday.
Two days rather. So, yeah, we'll start talking about the Boise game in a minute, but, you know, they looked stout for three quarters and then just didn't. You know, New Mexico kind of had the opposite problem, where they looked horrible for three quarters and then came alive. So while I think it's both teams are going to have obstacles that the other is going to have to prepare for, Boise State's probably going to have a little more of a challenge on their hands.
All right, ready for the Boise game now? Boise and Washington State? Or should we wait that for last and do San Diego State?
No, let's talk about this game.
Boise?
What happened?
Cozart happened. That's what happened. I had a tweet. Cozart's looking good. That tweet should be thrown in shreds, because the next few plays... Let me do this for you guys. Let me throw a shovel pass for pick six. Let me go out of bounds when we don't need to go out of bounds and try to forcefully attempt to go out of bounds when the clock is in our favor. Let's do this that's completely different than what we've done this whole game. It's just Cozart. Like, that's what happened. For those who didn't stay up to watch, Boise had a 21-point lead in the fourth quarter, lost the game in triple overtime because a pick six off a stupid shovel pass, a touchdown after a punt where it hit a Boise play or something, and Washington State recovered a punt, a fumble punt, scored a touchdown. And then there's some other score in there I'm missing at the moment. But, yeah, that's basically what happened. to get to overtime. Is that... Oh, man, that shovel pass still, that's ridiculous. That should never happen. Never happen.
You know, and in the same way that we just talked about Tuiati being very streaky, like, if you look at the breakdown of completions, or rather pass attempts in this game, you can see a similar kind of thing happening, because, you know, obviously Brett Rippon was 7 of 8 before he got knocked out of the game. But, you know, early on, Cozart was doing pretty well. You know, he had, you know, three plays, especially the big touchdown catch and run by Cedric Wilson, the 47-yarder, that capped off a 9-for-11 stretch where that was when Boise State was still cruising. And then after that,
he was
2 for his last 9. And that includes all the overtime attempts and stuff like that. It just, you know, if one or two plays goes differently, it maybe changes how the game turns out. But if you also look at the situations he was in when he was throwing those passes, you know, starting with his last first down throw to Cedric Wilson, it was a 3rd and 8. Beyond that, it was like impossibly long, obvious passing situations. 2nd and 7, 2nd and 25, 3rd and 9, 2nd and 12, 3rd and 12, where they were just asking him to make plays. So yeah, it was a little bit of a letdown late in that game, but also they weren't necessarily putting him in situations where he was going to succeed all the time.
Well, the running game kind of stalled a little bit here and there as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's another concern.
But did they need to throw as much as they did?
Probably not.
Like, here's the thing. Like, I get the game's tied. I was going to look at the 2nd and 25, but let's just say, like, here's where they punt. 3 plays. Here's where he went out of bounds. Okay, this is after the touchdown, after the stupid shovel pass, where they were driving too. Kozart ran the ball for a couple yards. He got that Cedric Wilson first down, like you mentioned. Wolpen a 2nd and 7. Then instead of him taking a sack, or it may not even been a sack, it may have been like a yard gain or a no gain. Who cares? 3rd and 7, clock's still ticking. You're probably going to win the game with 5 minutes and 50 seconds left. So, but they get the touchdown. So it's 31-24. It's like, all right, there's 5 minutes left. What can we do here? So, got the false start penalty. They're back at their stinking 5-yard line. They do get a first down, or not a first down. They get a couple yards by Madison. Kozart runs for great. So it's 3rd and 4. He doesn't get the first down, but I believe he also goes. Is that the play? He goes out of bounds, I believe.
I don't remember off the top of my head.
I'm trying to think what it was. No, I remember because I was pissed at that point. That's the play where he actively tries to go out of bounds. It may not have made a difference, just because it had been, what, 3:10 on the clock instead of 3:59, whatever it may be. But then it's the punt where it bounces off some Boise player and they get the ball. That's the big issue. That was the big turning point. It was special teams blunder. Well, it's all combined, but the special teams play and then they go 4 plays and get a touchdown. This shouldn't have happened. You're up. Boise, I don't think it's ever, I don't remember how far it's been back, but giving up a 21-point victory lead should never happen. And then overtime was they got lucky they didn't lose in overtime earlier.
Yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying. I just feel like, you know, I feel like it's a little unfair to put the entire thing on Kozart's shoulders.
Shovel pass, man. Come on. That should never have happened.
No, I mean, you're right about that, but that was just kind of one in a sequence of things that went away, that got away from them.
But that's my point. I get it's a whole game. A lot of stuff happened, like the punt. That's unfortunate how Washington should recover. But, okay, it's 2nd and 7 on that play. Let's say he just goes, just takes the ball down. It's 3rd and 8, 3rd and 9. They may not get the first down, but you're not giving them 7 points to tie the game. Or whatever, to get within a touchdown. You're up 14 points at that point. It still shouldn't matter. They give up the touchdown there. Boise's offense just stalled because the campus Aaron Pullman was rocking at that stadium. But even if they don't get the first down, they're still punting them back. It takes them, you're up 14, and say they have to go 75 yards. And there's only 5 minutes left in the game. I know they're a quick striking offense, but to me, that's the play that cost them the game.
I mean, I say that there's probably not one thing that went wrong. It was a sequence of events that went wrong. Because, you know, one thing we haven't even talked about yet, which probably is not going to come up in a lot of analyses, is, you know, they're up one score. They get the ball back at their own 10-yard line. 1st and 10, they get hit with a 5-yard penalty for a false start.
Yeah, that's right.
And, you know, they rush for 3, 8, and 3 yards. And guess what? If that penalty never happens, that's a first down where they're able to extend the drive. So, yeah, while the shovel pass is going to stand out in the highlight reels, you know, this was kind of one thing after another. It was the shovel pass and that false start and that, you know, fumbled punt And, you know, the...
And going out of bounds instead of running the clock off.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get your point, and it is a big play that stands out. But again, the way... Yeah, you're right. The way the offense is going, were they being too conservative because they didn't want Kozar to throw the ball? Is that why they ran every play at the 10-yard line? Or, I guess, the 5-yard line? Because, like you said, they ran on first down. Kozar took off on second down. I don't remember if that was a designed run or not. But they give it to Kozar again. Kozar again runs the ball back-to-back plays.
And, I mean, I think that it also kind of obscures the fact that for most of the game, the defense played great. Like, I'm trying to...
Yeah. And we didn't even mention Luke Falk got taken out as well.
Yeah. Didn't he get knocked out of this game?
He got benched for a moment, and then he got knocked out.
I mean, you know, they ended up with 5 sacks as a team. And I think that, you know, Leighton Vander Esch especially, you know, probably the defensive player of the week, 16 tackles, 2 sacks, and a forced fumble in this game. It, you know, it looked like it would be a little bit more of a defensive struggle for a while than it actually ended up being. But I think it's a credit to this defense, and I wish I could find the breakdown by quarters. But it wasn't really until... you know, late in that third quarter, early in that fourth quarter, where things started coming to life. You know, they had a 74-yard field goal drive in the second quarter, but there was a long stretch where, you know, it was, you know, three and out, you know, 4 plays, 13 yards, and they ended up forcing, you know, 3 turnovers heading into that fourth quarter as well. Things just ended up kind of getting away from them, where they ended up being forced onto the field a lot in that fourth quarter.
The first offensive touchdown for Washington State came with 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter. They had no, and that was when they scored their 24th point. Because looking around, I'm like, when's the last time, I put on Twitter, when's the last time Mike Leach's offense has never scored a touchdown? And it was getting to that point where, think about it, the scores, I get overtime, but 47 points you score in your first touchdown on offense is until midway through the fourth quarter. The defense is legit. The offense just... screwed up. Special teams screwed up. And then overtime, yeah, who cares? You're at the 25-yard line. It's not too hard to score. And then when you look at overtime really quick, like, Boise's defense made a huge stand. Like, they forced for overtime where Boise scored, got a field goal. 34-31. It's like, crap, only a field goal. Washington State had at the, 5-yard line, first and goal at the 5, second and goal at the 1, third and goal at the 1. Don't get fourth and goal at the 1. They take a penalty to push it back 5 yards. And then the funny thing, did you notice Boise declined the second delay of game penalty?
I did.
They declined. So that's a huge stand. And then the next touchdown, that's going to be the final touchdown. Boise gets a field goal. Or no, maybe not. Sorry, that's the wrong play. They had a 3rd and 2 and they nearly stopped. Well, whatever. That analysis doesn't count. I was thinking of something else. Sorry, but their defense came up time and time again as stopping the play, but I just go back to that fourth quarter of just the offense not converting and doing what they normally do. Not that I'm blaming Kozar, but you have a couple offensive possessions where you get the big number 99 gets that touchdown for Boise State, figure the game's over, and then you start doing weird stuff. And what we don't know is that... Oh, go ahead real quick.
Well, I was just going to point out something I don't think we've mentioned so far. Is the offensive line going to be okay? Because...
That's a good question. I don't know.
Because through 2 games, and yes, small sample size and everything, but by the numbers, only 5 teams in the entire country have given up more tackles for loss than Boise State has, and only 6 teams have allowed more than Boise's 8 sacks. If they can't get that sorted out sooner or later, that could cost them this year's chance at the conference title. I think it could.
The offensive line does need to get better, clearly. What we also need to look at is who's going to play quarterback, because there's no... Boise gave no word. Brian Harsin said nothing about an update. Obviously, it has to be a concussion the way he got hit and left the game. He was in street clothes. Are you confident of Kozar being your starting quarterback for 4 quarters versus New Mexico?
I mean, I think... considering what we just saw from New Mexico's defense this past week, I would say, yeah, probably. But I would rather have Rippon, obviously. I didn't really understand the panic that some Boise State fans had, and at least early in that game before he got knocked out, I felt kind of justified because he looked pretty good right up until he got hurt.
Well, they were already sporing before he got hurt. They're already sticking in Cozart as well. It wasn't like it was Rippon and then Cozart came in. Cozart was already, wasn't he already getting reps in the game before Rippon got hurt, I believe?
I don't remember that off the top of my head, but I just know that he looked pretty sharp, all things considered, but the offensive line just kind of let him down.
Yeah, he was 7. Yeah, 7 of 8. Trying to take a quick look. But yeah, the Luke Falk got injured, taken out of the game. No, Kozar did come in at least once or twice in a drive before Rippon left the game.
Okay.
So Boise loses. This is a tough game. It's an exciting game to watch. Like, out of all the games you could watch on this weekend, like, you had Notre Dame, Georgia ended up being a 1-point game. Clemson, Auburn was a snoozer, in my opinion. Was it 14-6? Ohio State, Oklahoma was pretty good, but triple overtime. Well, it's crazy, man. Backup quarterback battle. Whew.
I think Auburn's quarterback just got sacked again.
I think Boise's glad they're not Auburn's offensive line at the moment.
Oh, yeah, right.
All right, so that was it. Boise, that's a tough one, but they covered. That counts, right?
That they did.
All right, Arizona State, San Diego State, stupid Pac-12 network, but is Rashard Penny going to be Player of the Week? He was named Walter Camp National Player of the Week.
He probably will be.
Penny had, what did you say, 130 yards in, what, 10 seconds of game time? Wasn't it something like that? 90 seconds of game time?
I happened to catch the box score like right after he had returned his 99-yard kick. Or no, it was the first run. It was the 95-yard run. He had 107 yards and a score in the first 90 seconds of the game.
Just rushing, right? Just rushing only, correct?
They might as well just rename the Pac-12 network the Rashard Penny Network.
Oh, snap. He just is off the chain. 216 yards rushing. Like you said, 99-yard. I guess he is going to return kicks more often because this is the game he didn't mention. But, dude, take as many kicks as you want, man. 99 yards, a touchdown. I think it was probably – was that the opening kickoff, I'm assuming?
No, it was a little bit later on.
Or was it the first kick they received?
I think it was the first kick he received, but he ran the 95-yard back first.
Okay, I was just curious if the scene – like maybe he's going to take like the – because – you want to stay fresh and everything, maybe give him the first kick of the game return just so it's, you know what I mean? So it's like, oh, let's get that out of the way kind of, so he's not every the four or five extra attempts he has touching the ball just to get tired. But he, like, there's people saying, like, he's better than Donnell Pumphrey. Do you think that's the case?
I think he's a different kind of running back than Donnell Pumphrey. I think it's kind of unfair to both to say that one is better than the other because they're both clearly very good.
They are very good.
And let's not forget... Let's not forget he had a screen touchdown that he turned into, you know, another opportunity to make an Arizona State defender look silly. You know, it was a 33-yard touchdown where the guy had like literally no chance to catch him, and I felt really bad for him after watching that highlight.
Yeah, don't worry about it. He's good.
That man had a family.
Okay, fine, maybe a little bit. But this is all Rashard Penny. Even Juwan Washington did all right, 56 yards. Christian Chapman, the ultimate game manager. Sorry, David, I'm going to say it. 9 of 18 for 73 yards, and half of that was on that screenplay. And to be fair, give all the credit to Penny as well for those 33 yards.
Yeah, and I mean, and Chapman acknowledged on Twitter, actually. He had said that he knew he didn't have his greatest game, but he gave props to everybody else for picking him up. You know, not only Penny, but also let's not forget about the defense, which, you know, basically ate Arizona State's offense alive for most of the game.
Well, Manny Wilkins did pretty good throwing the ball. He had a couple touchdown passes. It was only a 10-point game. However, the stick and half was where they just shut him down.
They basically made Arizona State one-dimensional, though, because, yeah, Manny Wilkins had almost 300 yards passing. But they averaged only 1.4 yards per carry. You know, their leading running back, Kalen Ballage, is a very good running back. He only had 44 yards on the ground, less than 3 yards a carry.
Wilkins was sacked 5 times as well, so there's that.
So you have to adjust for that a little bit. But, yeah, I mean, the defense was basically dominant. You can look at a guy like Noble Hall, who had a sack and a half and 2 forced fumbles, you know. Chibu Onyeukwu had, you know, a tackle and a half, or a tackle for a loss and a half, and a sack and a half. So, and I believe Tariq Thompson, if I'm not mistaken, also recovered another fumble. So the kids are still all right in that secondary, too.
They're good, yeah.
You know, this San Diego State defense, we knew coming into the season, is going to be really legit. And it's going to be really fun to watch their game next week against Stanford.
Oh, man. Stanford, who got kind of, after the good first half versus USC, or first quarter and a half, kind of just faded away into obscurity.
Yeah, but, you know, they still have a lot to offer. And, you know, we know now that the Aztecs are basically in the driver's seat for whatever, you know, New Year's Day bowl hopes that the conference has. So, you know, next week's game, and we'll talk about that more in the preview, is going to be a must-watch. But I think that with what they've done in the first couple of weeks, you know, if they can take the running game away from Stanford, that could, you know, be the, that's probably the recipe for an upset.
All right, since we're wrapping up here really quick, I'm pulling up the current lines for that game. It's at San Diego State. What do you think the current line is at the moment? Versus Stanford? Remember, it's in the queue. It's on CBS Sports Network. It's a night game.
Stanford minus 13.5.
Oh, you don't like San Diego State, do you?
I just think that, you know, Stanford, we know they're going to be a very good team, and so I kind of expect it to be a little bit inflated.
It is currently, I'm looking at about four books here. It's about 8.5 right now.
Oh, okay.
One book, if you're lucky enough, if you had the, I'm not sure which one this was, but it started off Stanford minus 7, then quickly jumped to 9.5 to 10, and now it's kind of stabling back down to between 8.5 and 9.
I think that that's a serious sign of respect for the Aztecs.
What is Stanford ranked now? Are they ranked 20th, I believe, at the moment?
I don't have the poll in front of me.
I know San Diego State should be getting more points than they're currently getting. They are 19 in both polls right now, dropped 5 spots in each.
Yeah, so, I mean, and they're still a very good Pac-12 team. They're still going to compete for the conference title there. But it's also, I think, a very good matchup for the Aztecs. So we'll see.
We'll see. It's a good one. That's probably, we'll get, like I said, and you said, we'll get to all these games in our previews, but that was that's a game. Next week's going to be huge. You got Air Force. Oh, do you see what the official wardrobe for Air Force fans is at Michigan?
I did not.
Attention to cadets in the Ann Arbor area. Uniform for Big House Week is no shirts and khaki pants with cleats.
Oh, okay. I did see that. That's good. I like that.
That was a good one, yes. So that's that. That's anything else we need to add to the show tonight? Have you submitted your early power rankings for the week? Who's your top three?
I have not submitted them just yet. My top three, you know, obviously San Diego State's at the top. I think behind them, I'd probably still put Boise State somewhere in that mix. And you know what? Let's just say it's probably the same three as last week: Aztecs, Rams, Broncos.
Which was Broncos and then Rams.
Yeah.
Same here. That's what I have. And so that's yeah. So we're lame and we agree on too many things, Matt, but that's okay. That's how it works. That's fine. So that's our show for tonight. This is only like, oh, sorry. We have recording two here. Track two. I was like, oh, we're only at 50 minutes. No, we're at about hour 10. So we had 11 games to get to, but check us out. MWCWire.com. Apparently I found that we have a lot of people who are viewing the website. We appreciate that since we're at a new, sort of a new location from last year. But check us out, MWCWire.com. If you want to be part of our power poll, and like I said, you can hijack the poll if you want. That's okay. We don't care. Go to our Patreon page. You can participate in that. It's MWCWire. If you want to go to iTunes, tune in. Like we said, we want Matt, you will personally give them a shout-out if we get 5 stars, correct?
Yes.
So that's got to be worth the price of admission, right? It'll take you, what, two minutes to write a review to say we're awesome?
Yeah, probably.
That's exactly. All right, so that's our show for tonight. Again, MWCWire.com. We'll be back next week on Wednesday night, Thursday morning for the Week 3 preview show. And yes, we're always biased. It gets your team good, folks. See you later.